Started. It is 9 o'clock. Thank you for joining me. This is, I guess, a bit of a tradition where the city manager sort of walks through it for those who can make it. And I'm pleased to continue that. We'll have a meeting at 10 o'clock as well for those who couldn't make this time slot. So I want to do two things this morning. One is talk about the budget in general, and two is talk about more specifics about how it affects all of us as employees of the city. It's largely a good year, and not completely, but largely. And so I'll cover what that means here as we get forward. It depends on your situation, really, how it affects you. So the good news is we solved our pension problem. You solved our pension problem. And I can't stress how profoundly grateful I am to the work groups and the work that they did. I think most of you in the room probably had a chance anyway to respond to a survey. Many of you served on smaller teams, smaller work groups. And long story short, we found a solution that was palatable to City Council, and they approved that at their last meeting, or the meeting before. I'm losing track now. And the beautiful thing there is we, as a group, have taken $50 million of liability off the future shoulders of the taxpayers. What that means is we get to have a raise. let's put it in real terms. We get to have another raise. We had one last year, and the ability to provide one this year was very much in doubt. Until that solution happened, I had no confidence that we'd be able to do that. Now, the nice part is sales tax has come in higher than we had hoped. But other funding streams have come in lower than we expected. So, and it makes sense when you think about the economy. The federal government, state government have stopped giving grants. They cut where they can, things like CDBG and others. And the banks just aren't paying interest anymore. Have you noticed that? I don't know. They certainly aren't paying it to us, and our interest income is significantly lower than it has been in the past. I'm not sure a mattress is better yet, but it's getting close. Long story short, we didn't really have the kind of revenue gains you'd hope when you hear that sales tax is going up. Obviously, that's our number one source of tax. So we have been able to close the gap. The big picture is here to a certain degree. Last year, 11, we had a $2.9 million gap. That was the use of fund balance to cover the gap, right? Other people call it a deficit. But because we actually don't have to borrow it, there's some debate about is it a deficit or not. We don't have to borrow it. It is in the savings account. So we're in really great shape compared to a whole bunch of other cities throughout the country. You probably know that. Last year we were able to close that by $600,000. So we're starting to get those lines pushed together. And we won't have a sustainable budget until they are together, and we got to work to keep them parallel once they are. It's a lot like our pension issue. So the budget that I am proposing today to council and to the community really closes that by another $1 million. So we are left with a $1.3 million gap. This is a good thing. We have to close that gap. Unfortunately, it's also painful. Closing that gap means we have to stop funding things, right? We have to cut the budget to get there. We also try to raise revenue where we can. But as you may have guessed, taxpayers don't want to pay more, right? We're in a phase where we can't just go out and ask for more money. It just doesn't happen. So we do have to live within our means is the basic premise there, and that is painful in many ways. So I'm going to shift gears. I've talked about pension, and we'll talk about health care. And if you follow along in the green sheet, I will try to go in order at this point. And this is going to go out in paychecks as well, so everyone will get this. You'll just have maybe more information than the folks who weren't able to get here. So feel free to tell everyone that you work with everything you've heard today, by the way. The point is to communicate it. I'd love your help to do that. We've talked about the raise. It's slightly more than last year. It's 27 cents an hour versus 25 cents an hour. So that's a good thing, too. I think it's an indicator that our fiscal health is getting better and better. And, of course, just going back to the chart for a second, next year we will close the gap for once and all next year. So there'll be more cutting in the next budget, but my greatest hope is that that will be the last year of budget cuts. Nice to be done with that. And again, we string out the pain because that minimizes it. You can see the revenue line is going up. That's a good thing. And our hope is, you know, maybe it goes up even more and we don't have to cut as much. Because both of those things are what have to meet, and either one can move. Okay, so a raise. The next thing, of course, that we worry about as employees is health care, right? Those benefits that we rely on. There are no plan changes this year, which is probably, I don't know how many years we get to say that. And as we know, with the national health care legislative structure, there's a lot of changes coming. So I want to tee that up for next year. We will very likely have to change a whole bunch of things next year. This year, we get to take a breather and really not change our plans. So premiums. There's really no change for most employees. It's still the $13.62 biweekly for the 750 plan, and then zero for 1500 plan on the high deductible plan. So the premiums for dependent coverage this year finalizes the sort of truing up of all of our subsidies so that every type of employee is subsidized at the same rate. What that means is some folks have to pay more than they did before. So that group, which I think is about 60 folks, looking at the experts here, great, will have to pay more for their health care. And what that means is pay as much as everyone else does for health care. So as painful as that is for those 60 folks, it really is a fairness issue, and it does impact the budget. So no changes for all other employees. So that change is for, and it takes a minute for me to understand this, married or domestic partners who both work for the city and who have dependent coverage. Right? So they both choose the plan and they both work for the city. So that's the group that will have to pay a little more as they move forward. There's no change for active employees on the city paid subsidies for dependent coverage. And here's one that I'm very happy about. The HR department came to me with a plan to make this happen, and I was happy to support it. It's one of the great things we can do this year, and that's to increase the city's contribution to the health savings account plans. So if you're in those plans starting, I think, January 1st, is that the right day? I'm starting to learn this stuff. You will get more from the city in those plans. So another $25 per month for single coverage and $50 a month in family coverage. And, of course, that's more in family because there are more people, right? So those are really positive changes. And I recommend, by the way, if you haven't moved to the health savings account plan, this would be a great year to do that. It pays you more than it has before. In fact, at this point, it basically covers one person's deductible, right? That's a great way to think about it. So there's a way for folks who aren't in it to give themselves another raise if you move to it in many ways. Now, here's some of the negatives. Retiree health insurance subsidies are going to be eliminated in this budget if it's approved. So that's about a $431,000 annualized hit. And, you know, we have to recognize it's a very controversial benefit to start with. And taxpayers generally resent it, and they have let us know that year after year. This year, we simply can't continue to fund it. So we will be ending the practice of subsidizing retiree health care. They can still participate. So after you retire, you can still participate in the plans, but the city won't make them cheaper for you. You have to pay the full freight. That's really the one negative. I will tee up for next year, among a whole bunch of other changes, we're expecting the $750 deductible plan, which many people are still in, will probably end after next year. So we'll have to move to the health savings accounts or some other plan that ends up being created. And, of course, the national law changed, so flexible spending accounts now have a much reduced cap. So it's from $5,000 to $2,500. That's out of our hands, but we have to comply with the law, obviously. All right, so the rest of this sheet you probably know about fairly well, loggers, pension changes. Really no pension changes, but for new employees, the 80 and out rule is gone. So you rather than calculate your the years of service required before you retire that way, it'll just be 60 years old. Police and fire pension changes, there's really no changes for current employees. However, in the pension plan, however, those folks, firefighters and police officers, have given up the city match in the 401A plan. So again, it's kind of like the healthcare plan. They can still participate in the 401A program, but the city won't match their contribution. So those things help us do all the rest of this, by the way. So if you haven't thanked police or firefighter recently, it's a good time to do that. Sick leave buyback, we're going to continue to do. That's a good news story. That's something that costs some money. So it's continuing to do that is one of the things we feel good about. And other budget highlights, we've talked about the effort to close the gap, but the other thing I'm looking forward to a great deal is the work that HR is going to engage in for a compensation study. And so this really is aimed at figuring out changes to our philosophy of how we compensate employees who work for the city government. That's a fancy way to say, among many things, we want to move to a structure that can't allow pay compression to happen. Right now, it's very easy for it to happen. And once we figure out, and there's 100 ways to do this, we want to pick the one that works best for us. And that's why we need the help from outside. Once we fix that structure, then we will fix the problem. So it's intent here is not to take a one-year big increase in cost to temporarily fix a problem that's endemic to our system, but instead to fix our system and then fix our problem. So that's the goal there. I'm excited we'll be able to do it. It's not cheap. I think this is planned to cost about $100,000 for the study itself. The fix will cost a lot more than that, and we'll have to phase that in over 5 years potentially, but we will do it. That's my commitment to you. So that gets us through what we think are the specific impacts on employees. I'd love to answer any questions or hear any comments you have. There are a great number of things the budget does. You know, it's hard to tell when you read it. It's 526 pages of budget, and there's 15 pages of summary beforehand. The budget itself is considered a summary, if you can believe it, and it doesn't read like War and Peace, but it feels like it, right? So what you can't tell because of all the numbers is what we actually do for the community. And so I'll be taking a large effort about 11 o'clock at a press conference to talk through all that, to put words to the numbers. So I'm going to be talking about pretty much every department and what you deliver to the community. There are some, I think, exciting new ideas coming this year, one of which is cultural affairs. There's John Baker back there, if you wave. So John's the head of our community foundation. And the idea we're putting forth in the next budget is that we start a fund in the community foundation to fund cultural affairs. So it's not a budget decrease, but we want to start to provide a way for people to contribute to the cultural vibrancy of Columbia and it'll give them a way to fund themselves without being quite so dependent on the volatility of our funding streams. You know, you don't have to talk to Chris Stevens very long to realize how hard it is to compete with public safety, and they're in the same budget. So that makes a lot of sense, and obviously that's the right choice when you have to choose one over the other. But this gives them an opportunity moving forward to get off of the general fund, so to speak. So that's one idea that I like quite a bit. CVB is starting a certified tourism ambassador program. I love this idea. This was Amy Schneider's brainchild, and she's doing a great job implementing it in the CVB. It basically recognizes everyone that touches a visitor, right, from the cab driver, potentially the police officer, although hopefully not, right? They hope not, right? Although in many ways, you know, directions are one of the big questions that get asked, right, downtown. So anyone that touches a visitor's life will have deep knowledge about the community and can help that person have a great experience. And so we call it the Certified Tourism Ambassador Program. It's a great idea, and I can't wait to get into it. So that'll be happening this year as well. So now that I've filled some space, are there any other questions about the changes? Wow. Man, last year there were a lot of questions. It must mean it's a good year, right?
Mike, I don't know if you want to touch on some of the other new initiatives. Might be good for the employees to hear about.
Yeah. Get my list, my cheat sheet. You've probably heard of the strategic plan. This is something I care about a lot. I like that song, by the way. Was it Lynyrd Skynyrd? All right. I was born in Florida, you know. That was the first song I ever heard, I think. So strategic planning, you know, it sounds like a big word. It's not very specific. You say it and most people glaze over, but it's so important to us. You know, one of my favorite quotes to say about it, and you'll get sick of me saying it, Yogi Berra said, be careful, if you don't know where you're going, you might not get there. If you don't know where you're going, you might not get there, right? So then that's absolutely true. It's pretty easy for government to just kind of run the pattern, you know, keep doing what we do. As the community gets more and more dissatisfied and grows farther and farther away from where we are, that's a very dangerous place for governments to be. That's where you have, and you can see this all over the country, massive layoffs when there's a taxpayer revolution. They get tired of how things are being done or not being done in many cases. And you see this, you know, there's a city in Georgia that has outsourced all but six jobs. There are only six paid positions in the city government. Everything else is contracted. Wow. I wouldn't have thought that was possible. And I believe that's dangerous and risky, and so far it's working for them. So we'll see. The whole point, though, is without a strategic plan, we've got nothing to talk about with the community other than the day-to-day wins and failures of just normal life. So I really believe in it, and the strategic plan is not much more than our bucket list, right? What do we want to do this year? And when we start talking about those things, they can be very powerful ideas. One of the things that's come out of it, which I'll skip to, is the City University. I love this idea. City University, think, what is that? Well, think about, how many supervisors are there in the room? Quite a few. How many folks are thinking maybe someday you'll want to try it, be a supervisor? Ah, you might be smarter than all of us. Well, it's a different job, right? When you come into an organization, you usually start at a level and then you become a supervisor. Supervising a crew is very different than being on the crew, right? And what we generally do as government, and I don't mean Columbia here, I'm condemning all government, is we never tell you how to do it. We don't teach you what's good or bad, or techniques of how to do it. We just, oh, you've been doing the crew work for 10 years. All right, you're the supervisor now. Sink or swim. There you go. No training. And we kick you out there and hope you do well. And if you don't, well, there's discipline, so you'll learn the hard way, right? Well, that's the lousy way to move forward, right? It doesn't, well, one, it doesn't do any sort of succession planning, right? And so the thing about City University is it proactively says, okay, if you want to be a member of the leadership of this organization, we have a way for you to learn how to do it. And we'll actually teach you. We'll take the time to show you how to be good at it. And you get a chance to decide whether I like it or I don't like it. A lot of people, you know, it's too much hassle. I like what I'm doing. It's not worth the 5% maybe I'm going to get. You know, but you get a taste of it, and you get to decide rather than take the job and then find out you hate it and then feel like you're stuck, right? So this is a great way to, one, flesh out how you feel about leadership roles, supervisory duties, and also learn how to do it well, which is pretty rare in any organization. So I'm very excited about this idea. HR's got a lot of work ahead of it next year. And we're going to, somewhat similarly to the contact center, we're going to take our time and do it right. So it'll be baby steps and we'll grow into it, but I am excited about it. There's a lot more to it. I'm summarizing. You've probably heard of, so I mentioned the contact center. We are going to begin to implement that in the coming year. It's, generally speaking, you remember what we did with community development last year, right? We took that one-stop shop idea, we made it writ large for anyone that wants to do anything with their property. They come in, there's a one place to go, and we'll help them achieve their dream, if we can. We'll follow all the rules, but we help them do it rather than sort of bounce them around the organization. So the contact center really is that for everything else on an individual level. So anyone can walk in with any question about anything, and the idea is, or call or email or use the website. And this group of people will know the answer, and they'll be their advocate. So the goal of the folks that will eventually work for the contact center is to help those folks get what they need. And it's not a judgmental thing. It's not, well, you know, here's the rules. It's my job. I'm an advocate for you. I'm going to take your problem, make it my own, and help you solve it. That can be complicated. We're going to evolve into it. We're going to take one set of service, and we're going to get great at that, and then we're going to add other services as we go. Probably heard of FastCat. Has anybody not heard of FastCat? Okay, good, because we've been talking about it a lot. This is really a big change for city government. This is, you know, an entrepreneurial approach for a government service, which is a bit risky, right? We're very close to hiring our first sales position, and the job of this person is to go out and get money, right? It's not to provide a service. It's to go get apartments to give us checks so we can provide the service. That sounds very, you know, mercenary, and it is. We are being entrepreneurs, right? That's the one person whose job it is to get money. I don't want any of you motivated by that. I want all of you to be motivated by public service. So this is the one exception. Now, the goal, of course, is that it will fund what everybody's always wanted with transit. And if you look at FastCat, it is cool. It's very cool. It's fast cycle time. You never have to wait more than 15 minutes for a bus. Well, you can't say that on any other route, right? 15-minute wait times. It's going to run till 2:30 in the morning, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Well, that's pretty good. That's a big need in the college community, right? I'm sure they're studying. And so that's what customers want, right? It's safe. There's 8 video cameras in every bus, and they don't have to be tempted to drink and drive. We'll get them home safe. We'll get them to the library safe, right? And it's going to have an app, a smartphone app. You can go to the website and download it so you know where the bus is, how long you're going to wait for it at any particular stop. Our pricing schemes have really adapted to the market, too. So there's a way to buy a pass for the whole semester that actually brings enough money in to fund the service. So a lot of cool things about it. It's going to be great, although right now it is running on a deficit, right? So that salesperson has to dig out of a hole. I feel sorry for whoever takes the job. But I'm also excited because I think the service will sell. I think there is a market for it, and I'm excited to see if we can get it to work. Two more points. So roll carts. You've probably heard about that, too. Has anybody not heard about roll carts for solid waste? You know, most of the community's not seen them before, so it's kind of hard to convince folks to try something you can't see, taste, smell, hear, right? It's our classic problem. We're selling service, and it's invisible until you get it. So it's a trust me thing, right? Well, there's not a lot of that going around, so we have a hard sell. We're going to do a pilot project this year that's coming up. The Public Works folks have done a great job coming up with a way to do a pilot. You can imagine it's fairly expensive to think about a pilot for roll carts, because at the end of the day, you either have to do it or you don't, and it costs money to do it. So they've found a great way to make it affordable. And fundamentally what this is, this cart would replace wherever you're putting your garbage right now, this cart is that place. Now imagine that place having wheels. You don't have to touch your garbage again. You haul that out to the curb. I shouldn't say haul. It's not hard to move these things, right? They're really smart engineers built them, so it's easy to move. And you take it to the curb, and rather than have a human being grab the garbage, throw it in the truck, and after about 40 tons of garbage, I hurt my back, which happens a lot, and you put yourself in that job. It's a tough job, and we have a lot of injuries in that. So rather than that approach, the truck itself has this giant arm, and it picks up the cart and empties the cart, puts it back down. And the only drawback to the system, by the way, it costs less too, significantly less over the long term after you get into it. You got to pay the capital costs, et cetera. Long term, it's cost effective. But the one drawback is, okay, when the truck goes away, there's still the cart on the curb, right? So you have to go get it and bring it back to your house. That is one thing where our current system outperforms the new one. So it's not 100%, this is a no-brainer. There are reasons for people not to like it. And there is some fear in the community about, you know, can I move this cart? Where will I put it? Et cetera. So we'll work through that through the pilot, and we'll see how the community responds to it. If they don't like it, we won't do it. It's pretty simple. And so the budget is created to provide the capacity to do it, but if we don't, that's okay. We save a significant amount of debt, right? We'll just keep doing it. All right. And let's see. Finally, this is one of the things I'm very excited about. That Ready is doing, Regional Economic Development Inc., basically our economic development department with a lot of member partners. They've been talking to a lot of firms and businesses throughout the city have said, you know, we cannot get enough IT people, especially with web development and help desk. We just can't get them to work here. This is the downside of IBM, right? It's a really good story, and we want them here. It's a good problem to have, but they're hiring away all of the IT talent, right? We've already lost folks to them, as have the university and every business that's got folks willing to make a change. So it's a double-edged sword there. Well, so Ready said, what can we do to help this problem? You know, we know we have people who'd love a job. There's 4,000 of them out of work right now who'd love to work in Columbia, 4,700. How can we get these 4,700 to want to take on the role of IT, right? Learn how to do it. Well, there's a big problem. They don't know how to do it, right? So they have the willingness but no education. And so what Ready's done with the help of the CDBG program, so here's a great story where one part of the organization is empowering another one. So the CDBG funds are going to pay for this, and Ready is partnered with two other organizations, and I'll remember them here. Central Missouri Community Action. Some of you might know that Organization and the Columbia Area Career Center. And so the community action folks will find the people who want to try it. And then the other organization will find the instructors. And basically by the end, the goal is to take folks from the central city and at the end get them into this training program. At the end, they are a certified, and this is, you know, the big certifications. I mean, you can do it and you're good at it. For web development, help desk, and then Reddy's job is to have the jobs lined up at the end of that. So this is beautiful continuum that absolutely attacks three of our big problems all at once, right? Unemployment, can't get enough people, and job training. So it's a great story, and I can't wait to tell people about it as we move forward. Okay, it's been half an hour. I need some coffee. Any questions before we go? We do have time left, but it's pretty straightforward. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Just ran out of money. So merit increase is something I believe in and would love to fund at some point. And I think as our fiscal health improves, you can expect to see some amount of merit increase in future years. So I don't want to tell you it's never going to happen. It will happen as soon as we have enough dollars coming in the door. But no merit increase this year. Yeah, you know, I'm glad this one comes up. It came up last year, and the question is, what about temporary employees? So this raises for permanent employees. For temp employees, it really is a matter of what the market will bear, right? So we make that decision every time we hire a temporary employee, right, about how much they'll be paid. So in many regards, that is a driver of, one, the minimum wage rate, but two, we tend to pay better than that. But two, it's really what we need to pay to get the work done. So it can be there for temps is the answer. But it's not automatic. Yeah.
What is salary?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's where, let's say you've worked in a job for 5 years and you make a certain amount of money and someone gets hired brand new at a higher salary than you have. Well, that doesn't feel very fair. You've got time in, you've got experience, you're probably teaching them how to do some of the work and they're paid more. That's salary compression and it doesn't feel very good for a lot of folks. And it exists right now all over the organization. Now the reason that happens is the market increases, right? Where we have to take years without pay increases, etc., the market doesn't stand still. So to get someone to take the job, occasionally we have to pay more than we used to. Right now our structure says, well, pay what you have to get them in the door, and that's life, you know. Now I will say I worked most of my career in that situation, so I know how it feels. And so the goal then is to create a system that won't allow that to happen but can still accommodate what the market needs. So there's many, many ways to do that. We'll find the one that works for us. Anything else? Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it.